Making the world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. All right.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All righty. Okay. Oh, man. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, once again broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. And it's another great day, folks. It's another cold, blustery day. I don't see how they can call this springtime in Chicago. However, I hope it's totally real. Basically, I'm saying I hope it's the weather is great where you are. But I know that certain parts of the country, it's just as cold, if not colder here. And there's no doubt about it, folks. Spring has not sprung yet, not in Chicago, in some parts of the country. And we're all wondering, where the hell is it? Where the hell is it? You want to get outside and have some fun. You don't want to be stuck in the house. So, you know, you go to work, you know, you don't want to be stuck in the house. You want to get out. You want to get out and, you know, get out in the neighborhood, the community. Yeah, meet the people around, meet your neighbors and stuff like that. And, you know, you can't do it. It's too damn cold. You got to, it's like the, it's like Arctic sometimes, you know, I mean, especially here in the city of Chicago. But anyway, enough with the negative weather, even though it's something to talk about because spring has not sprung. We haven't saw spring. I mean, for what, March, April, May? For 3 months, two and a half months, maybe, there's been no spring, and it looks like there may not be any spring. I'm looking at June to be kind of frosty, unseasonable. So there you have it. All right, thanks for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I am so giddy, folks. I am really happy to be here. And I'm happy that you are joining me, or you should be joining me, and because it's always fun. I try to make it fun. I don't try to be boring. I hope I'm not boring. You know, I don't think I am because you know, I do listen to my shows sometimes. And if I'm boring, I say to myself, I got to straighten it up. I got to do better. Even if people say, George, you were good. That was good. But I may have a different take on it. I mean, you may think it's good, and I may say, well, that can be a little bit better. Because, you know, I'm harder on myself than anybody else is. And I think that's what a lot of people are when they're doing things for themselves. So you want to make sure that you are doing something that's exciting, something that's fun, something that, you know, people can relate to and enjoy it. Because, hey, wow, when it's your time. I mean, your time is valuable, and there's no doubt about it. And when you tune into the George Wilder Jr. Show or any show, you want something for your time. I don't blame you. You want something for your time. You want to be able to say, I'm going to sit down here. I'm going to listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show because it sounds exciting. It sounds fun. And you, if I was boring or uninterested, I mean, you would probably just, hey, turn off the computer or turn off the radio itself. And you know, that will tell me that, hey, I need to do something. A lot of people, when they don't like something or something's not interesting to them, they're not going to file a complaint. They're not going to get in touch with me and tell me that, George, you're doing a good job. George, you're doing a bad job. They're not going to say that. They're just going to turn it off, period. You know, and I'm going to keep hearing, I'm going to keep thinking that I'm great. And I listen to the tapes and I'm saying, no, that's not right. You are not interesting. You are not fun. So I have to try to rectify that, because I've just stated you want something for your time. You want to be entertained. You want to be, you want to laugh. You want to, you know, say, hey, wow, this is great. You want to keep tuning in. But if I sound dull, uninteresting, I don't care about what I'm doing, of course you're going to turn the page. I would also, if somebody was like that around me. I don't want boring, uninteresting people around me. I really, truly don't. I don't want boring and uninteresting people around me. And I'm pretty sure you don't, because most of the time, boring and uninteresting people, you become boring and uninteresting because you hanging around these type of people. So I always like exciting people around me or on my radio show. It doesn't matter. And, you know, who have something to offer you. And myself, because I, like I said before, I can be 165 or 170 or 180. I will still want my guest to tell me something that I don't know, because like I've said several times on the show, you're never too old to learn something new. I learn something all the time from young people, old people, babies. I learn something all the time, and it's fun. It's fun. I used to think, you know, because I used to think if I was a certain age, maybe a 50 or 60 or 70 or 80, and I didn't know a certain thing that I should have known, that I should have experienced in life, I'd feel really bad about it. But I don't anymore. I really don't. I mean, if there's something I don't know, if there's something I missed out on and didn't learn, I'm always, and you should be that way too, I'm always eager and open to learn, no matter what it is, no matter how simple it is, no matter how elementary it might be. I'm always open to learn something new, to do something new, to conquer something that I have not conquered before. Always trying to reach another height, not another low. You know, I always try to motivate and reach my listeners, you know, because that's what it's all about. Because if I don't motivate you or reach you or I'm not interesting, you're going to say, hey, wow, I'm not going to listen to this. He's boring. He's uninteresting, you know. So I hope I'm not I hope I'm not boring. 347-857-1762. I don't buy the ratings or the statistics from the show. I'm pretty good. You know, they're saying that I'm pretty good, but I'm always modest about that. You know, I don't know. I never like to be put out on a pedestal. It just wasn't for me. And I still don't like that. I'm just who I am, folks. I'm just who I am. But there you've got people out there who will try to take advantage of that. You know, well, he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. We're going to try to scam him. But, you know, that's what's happening. I mean, there's too many nice people in the world, and nice and friendly and gullible people in the world. And that's where the scammers come in. They'll try to take advantage of your niceness, your giving heart. And it happens all the time. People are very too nice, and they get taken because they're nice. And that's totally, totally wrong, but it happens in the 21st century, the year 2017. Anything goes. These guys are out here to get what they think you have, you know, and they're going to, you know, check you out and say, hey, wow, he's nice, he's gullible. Maybe we can, he's stupid, he's silly, or something like that. Maybe we can fool him into doing this and sending us money or whatever. And you know, you have to watch you have to watch it, you know, you have to watch it. And it's too many seniors, too many seniors fall for these kinds of scams. They fall for them, you know, they really fall for them. And we have to educate our seniors, our elderly, and let them know that they have to really, really pay attention to people who are trying to steal their life savings or whatever they might have. And the thieves don't care what they take from you, as long as they take something. They don't give a damn what they take, as long as they can say, hey, wow, I did this, I did that. And I want to say to my seniors, make sure you lock your doors. Don't open your doors for anybody that you don't know. If you don't know them, don't open that door. If you aren't expecting company, do not open that door. Too many seniors do that. Too many elderly people do that. They get up and open their doors, and that's it. You know, you know, just don't do that. And when you're walking down the street, make sure you pay attention or be aware of your surroundings. You watch the people around you, because if the bad guys are around you and they notice that you, there's a possibility that they will not harm you. But if you're walking down the street and you're not paying attention to where you, to your surroundings, that is, the bad guy has you, you know, and that's true. That's true. Pay attention to your surroundings. So if anything should happen, you'd be ready for it. You'd be ready. And more likely, when you're ready for something that you know about to happen, you can escape it probably with your life, because you know it's going to happen. But if it surprises you, then, you know, it could be bad, you know, catastrophic. But pay attention to your surroundings, because we're in a world today where we have to pay attention to our surroundings. And there are some people that they don't even go out to the store without arming themselves. It's just that bad. They're not bad people. They're great people, but they are going to protect themselves. They're going to defend themselves. So you have people going out, good people, great people, friendly people, successful people, working people, who never go out, who never leave the house without some sort of protection. And in some cases, I cannot blame them. I cannot blame them. Because if the bad guy know that you may have a weapon or mace or something, they will leave you alone. They will not approach you, you know. I mean, because a lot of people are carrying concealed weapons. Once again, I want to say, just because you carry a concealed weapon doesn't make you a bad guy. I want people to understand that. You know, you got a lot of people out here carrying mace, something. You know, and I'm not saying go buy a gun to my seniors. No, I'm just saying that what is actually going on out here in the world. But basically, I'm saying be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of your surroundings. Watch those people who are walking in back of you, coming in front of you, on the side of you. You never know when someone might actually attack you. And one of the things about the criminals of today, they will attack you. They will do you harm in broad daylight. It's no more in broad daylight. It's no more coming up out of the alley or you're walking down the street in the dark. They will come after you in broad daylight where hundreds of people are around you. They will come after you. You know, they are bold. They are sophisticated. And they don't give a damn. They don't care. They just will knock you in the head and take whatever they can take, and that's it. And they may not even get caught. Because one of the things, when a criminal doesn't get caught for his crimes or her crimes, they are out to do it again. So hopefully the police officers, the police can take these people off the streets. You know, but every time, I've said this before, when you take a criminal off the street, there's another one in its place. It's just like a cycle. I mean, they're like weeds. If you pull a few weeds, some more weeds are going to grow in its place. So you have to keep vigilant. You have to keep aware of your surroundings, and that's for real. I mean, that is for real. My guest today, folks, is author Ronald Fernham, on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to have commentary. We're going to talk about some things that's going on in the world. All right, and I said this yesterday, and I'll probably say it tomorrow. Be nice to one another. Be nice. Treat people with respect. Treat people with dignity, you know, no matter who they are, what their ages are, because there's too many people out here who think just because you're in your 60s, your 70s, your 80s, your 90s, that you are to be beaten on, you are to be disrespected, you are to be mentally challenged. I mean, so, you know, try to be nice to people. And people would be nice to you right back. But, you know, you got these thugs out here that they don't give a damn. They don't care, you know. But it happens. You know, you're a senior citizen. People see some people. Now, I'm not saying all people. But some people might see a senior citizen walking down the street with a cane or something. And they may figure that this person is a senior citizen, that this person should be disrespected, beat on or whatever, because they're old. You know, some people just see old people as old people and they shouldn't be around and they should have their asses kicked. Now, for real, that's some people, not all people. Most people, I believe, are respectful of the elderly, because you have to look at it this way. Look at it the way I look at it. I mean, you don't get to be 60 years old, 65, 70, 80, 85, 90. You don't get to be that age unless you've done something right. To get old, it means that you've done something right in your life. You've survived, especially if you grow old and you grow old being a success at what you've done throughout your life. That's a gem. That's success. So people have to realize that. I mean, you don't grow old being a failure. Or some people, I mean, I think early death, when it comes to early death, I'm going to say teenagers, okay? Teenagers, early death, diseases. But if you can grow older, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even past your hundreds, it means you've done something right in your life. So many people look at being a senior citizen or being elderly negatively, which should not happen. Should not happen. Because that senior citizen, that elderly person, was successful at some point in their lives. This is why they're still here. They have, you know, had children. They've had kids that gone on to be successful because of their parents. You know, the parents, that elderly person who once used to be a young person, had children and instilled in his or her children or their children the importance of getting an education, the importance of learning how to treat people, the importance of keeping a well-organized home, the importance of driving and following all the traffic laws when you're driving. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that, I mean, when I was young, I used to look up to older people. When I was young, maybe in my teens or early teens or even as a child, I looked up to older people. the reason why I looked up to older people is because I thought, because they have been on earth for so long, that there was so much they could tell me, because I was eager to learn what they knew, because I wasn't getting it from my own family. I wasn't getting it from school. I needed to know. I had that curiosity. You know, I needed to know what the older people knew. So, because I wanted to know, just for the hell of it, maybe, I don't know. But I had this thirst for knowledge. I really had a big thirst for knowledge, even though I know there was people around me trying to steer me in the wrong direction. But I didn't let that happen because I had that thirst for knowledge. And I thought that at that time, I felt that being hanging around older people, people a few years older than I was at the time, could tell me a lot of things about what was going on in the world, what they've experienced. I used to love history, and I still do love history, especially when someone's telling me something else, telling me stories. My grandmother used to tell me things about her life, and I just, you know, just sucked it all up and sucked it all in, and it was great. It was great. She told me some things. She didn't tell me a lot. She didn't tell me everything, but there was a few things she would bring up, you know, whenever I would just at randomly just go by and visit her, you know. So, and she lived to be 97 years old, if anybody wanted to know that. And she was 97 years old when she died. And her birthday was close, and sometimes on Thanksgiving. So she was a God-fearing woman. She was a church-going person, and you know, she was 97 when she passed away. So that means she was on the earth a long time, and she saw so much, and I still respected her. I still looked up to her. I didn't treat her any when I saw her, I didn't treat her any different than when she was very, very young. You know, she was still a monarch. She was still it, even though she was weak and feeble. I still looked up to my grandmother, and I still do today. I mean, everything that I write, I dedicated to her, you know, because she was such a great person. And I've heard that I was her favorite person in the family. That's what I heard. But, you know, I don't know. But if that's true, I'm humbled by it. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My author, Ronald Fernham, hopefully will be on the show. And we're going to take a break right here, folks, and we will be right back. A musical break. Do we have any commercials? No. So... You know, I don't know. We don't have no commercials, but I think if you podcast the show, you might hear a commercial or two. I do. I'm supposed to, or I should, or I ought to just, I can incorporate commercials into the show. Because if you're playing commercials, if you're playing stuff that's sponsored, it's supposed to be a payment or something. You're supposed to get paid. We'll get into that. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Like I said, my guest is Ronald Firmham on the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's 6:29 straight up Chicago time. I think it's about 50 degrees in the city of Chicago. It's always cooler by the lake, folks. Always cooler by the lake. And sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's not so good, but it's what we have. It is what we have. And it is what we have. And it is what happened. I hope it's great where you are. And I always say that because, you know, it has to be. I mean, spring has to be sprung at some time.
What keeps us healthy and happy as we go through life? If you were going to invest now in your future best self, where would you put your time and your energy? There was a recent survey of millennials asking them what their most important life goals were. And over 80% said that a major life goal for them was to get rich. And another 50% of those same young adults said that another major life goal was to become famous. And we're constantly told to lean into work, to push harder, and achieve more. We're given the impression that these are the things that we need to go after in order to have a good life. Pictures of entire lives, of the choices that people make and how those choices work out for them, those pictures are almost impossible to get.
He was elderly. He was
most
old man,
of what we know about human life, we know from asking people to remember the past.
And I know you ain't never heard.
And as we know, hindsight is anything but 2020.
I heard him sparkling.
We forget vast amounts of what happens to us in life, and sometimes memory is downright creative.
I'm not sure.
But what if we could watch entire lives as they unfold through time? What if we could study people from the time that they were teenagers all the way into old age to see what really keeps people happy and healthy?
He's your uncle.
Who did that? The Harvard study of adult development may be the longest study of adult life that's ever been done. For 75 years, we've tracked the lives of 724 men. Year after year, asking about their work, their home lives, their health, and of course asking all along the way without knowing how their life stories were going to turn out. Studies like this are exceedingly rare. Almost all projects of this kind fall apart within a decade because too many people drop out of the study, or funding for the research dries up, or the researchers get distracted, or they die, and nobody moves the ball further down the field. But through a combination of luck and the persistence of several generations of researchers, this study has survived. About 60 of our original 724 men are still alive, still participating in the study, most of them in their 90s. And we are now beginning to study the more than 2,000 children of these men. And I'm the fourth director of the study. Since 1938, we've tracked the lives of two groups of men. The first group started in the study when they were sophomores at Harvard College. They all finished college during World War II, and then most went off to serve in the war. And the second group that we've followed was a group of boys from Boston's poorest neighborhoods, boys who were chosen for the study specifically because they were from some of the most troubled and disadvantaged families in the Boston of the 1930s. Most lived in tenements, many without hot and cold running water. When they entered the study, all of these teenagers were interviewed, they were given medical exams. We went to their homes and we interviewed their parents. And then these teenagers grew up into adults who entered all walks of life. They became factory workers and lawyers and bricklayers and doctors. One president of the United States. Some developed alcoholism. A few developed schizophrenia. Some climbed the social ladder from the bottom all the way to the very top. And some made that journey in the opposite direction. The founders of this study would never in their wildest dreams have imagined that I would be standing here today, 75 years later, telling you that the study still continues. Every 2 years, our patient and dedicated research staff calls up our men and asks them if we can send them yet one more set of questions about their lives. Many of the inner city Boston men ask us, why do you keep wanting to study me? My life just isn't that interesting. The Harvard men never ask that question. To get the clearest picture of these lives, we don't just send them questionnaires. We interview them in their living rooms. We get their medical records from their doctors. We draw their blood. We scan their brains. We talk to their children. We videotape them talking with their wives about their deepest concerns. And when about a decade ago, we finally asked the wives if they would join us as members of the study, many of the women said, you know, it's about time. So what have we learned? What are the lessons that come from the tens of thousands of pages of information that we've generated on these lives? Well, the lessons aren't about wealth or fame or working harder and harder. The clearest message that we get from this 75-year study is this: good relationships keep us happier and healthier, period. We've learned three big lessons about relationships. The first is that social connections are really good for us, and that loneliness kills. It turns out that people who are more socially connected to family, to friends, to community, are happier, they're physically healthier, and they live longer than people who are less well connected. And the experience of loneliness turns out to be toxic. People who are more isolated than they want to be from others find that they are less happy. Their health declines earlier in midlife, their brain functioning declines sooner, and they live shorter lives than people who are not lonely. And the sad fact is that at any given time, more than one in five Americans will report that they're lonely. And we know that you can be lonely in a crowd and you can be lonely in a marriage. So the second big lesson that we learned is that it's not just the number of friends you have, and it's not whether or not you're in a committed relationship, but it's the quality of your close relationships that matters. It turns out that living in the midst of conflict is really bad for our health. High conflict marriages, for example, without much affection, turn out to be very bad for our health, perhaps worse than getting divorced. And living in the midst of good, warm relationships is protective. Once we had followed our men all the way into their 80s, we wanted to look back at them at midlife and to see if we could predict who was going to grow into a happy, healthy octogenarian and who wasn't. And when we gathered together everything we knew about them at age 50, it wasn't their middle-aged cholesterol levels that predicted how they were going to grow old. It was how satisfied they were in their relationships. The people who were the most satisfied in their relationships at age 50 were the healthiest at age 80. And good, close relationships seem to buffer us from some of the slings and arrows of getting old. Our most happily partnered men and women reported in their 80s that on the days when they had more physical pain, their moods stayed just as happy. But the people who were in unhappy relationships, on the days when they reported more physical pain, it was magnified by more emotional pain. And the third big lesson that we learn about relationships and our health is that good relationships don't just protect our bodies, they protect our brains. It turns out that being in a securely attached relationship to another person in your 80s is protective, that the people who are in relationships where they really feel they can count on the other person in times of need, those people's memories stay sharper longer. And the people in relationships where they feel they really can't count on the other one, those are the people who experience earlier memory decline. And those good relationships, they don't have to be smooth all the time. Some of our octogenarian couples could bicker with each other day in and day out. But as long as they felt that they could really count on the other when the going got tough, those arguments didn't take a toll on their memories. So, this message that good, close relationships are good for our health and well-being, this is wisdom that's as old as the hills. Why is this so hard to get and so easy to ignore? Well, we're human. What we'd really like is a quick fix, something we can get that'll make our lives good and keep them that way. Relationships are messy and they're complicated, and the hard work of tending to family and friends, that's not sexy or glamorous. It's also lifelong. It never ends. The people in our 75-year study who were the happiest in retirement were the people who had actively worked to replace workmates with new playmates. Just like the millennials in that recent survey, many of our men, when they were starting out as young adults, really believed that fame and wealth and high achievement were what they needed to go after to have a good life. But over and over, over these 75 years, our study has shown that the people who fared the best were the people who leaned into relationships with family, with friends, with community. So what about you? Let's say you're 25, or you're 40, or you're 60. What might leaning into relationships even look like? Well, the possibilities are practically endless. It might be something as simple as replacing screen time with people time, or livening up a stale relationship by doing something new together, long walks or date nights, or reaching out to that family member who you haven't spoken to in years, because those all too common family feuds take a terrible toll on the people who hold the grudges. I'd like to close with a quote from Mark Twain. More than a century ago, he was looking back on his life, and he wrote this. There isn't time. So brief is life for bickerings, apologies, heartburnings, callings to account. There is only time for loving, and but an instant, so to speak, for that. The good life is built with good relationships. Thank you.
You're doing a good job, everyone.
All right, thank you for that. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently. All righty, back in Chicago, folks. Thank you, thank you. I'm so proud to be on the radio today. It's just something gives me something to do. Okay. All right. Rahm Emanuel postpones briefings on CPS rescue. If you want to know, I'm talking about school funding. The Chicago Public Schools, the city where I'm broadcasting, the Chicago Public Schools, this is a big institution. They are on the brink of bankruptcy. Yeah, the city lost a suit. They were suing the state for school funding, and they lost. They lost the suit for a lot of kids are being kicked off school buses. They are near bankrupt. They don't have any other recourse. They thought that they were going to, the judge was going to rule in their favor, and the judge ruled against them. And Rahm Emanuel has postponed a briefing on CPS rescue. I really don't think this guy gives two damns about these public schools. He's just grandstanding. He's grandstanding. I mean, you got, I think Forrest Claypool, the CEO of Chicago Public Schools, I think he cares a little bit more about what's going on in Chicago Public Schools than Rahm Emanuel. I believe Rahm Emanuel is probably thinking about re-election. That's not going to happen. You know, so, but Chicago Public Schools are in dire straits, folks. I mean, it's like they're going to shut their doors if they don't get some money, if they don't get some funding. Rahm's got to find some money because he's not going to get anything from the state. As I've been saying before, folks, we, Chicago, we don't have a budget. We don't have a budget. The governor refuses to sign a budget. And the legislature in the state of Illinois, they don't have the votes to overrule Bruce Rauner in order for there to be a budget in the state of Illinois. And we're in dire straits here, folks. I mean, as I was saying on the show yesterday, and I hope you were listening, as I was saying on the show yesterday, that, what was I saying yesterday? I was saying that they don't care. They don't care a damn about these schools. Rahm Emanuel's taking money from public schools and giving money to schools downstate that aren't really in need of the money. But 85 to 90% of Chicago schools are filled with poor children. And, you know, the families can't afford certain things and this and that, but the schools are totally, totally bankrupt. I mean, you know, they may still close down before the actual year ends. And a lot of people are upended. A lot of students are up and wondering if they're going to graduate from high school on time or not, or graduate, period. This is just phenomenal. And now they're kicking kids off school buses because they're trying to save money because they lost this. They lost the suit to the state. And I actually thought they were going to win the suit, you know, because I thought maybe the judge cared about children. Apparently he doesn't, because he ruled in favor of the governor, the Republican governor, who is not going to sign a budget into law to pay these schools. You know, so without money, millions and trillions of millions of dollars to be forwarded to the public schools from the state, or Rahm Emanuel somehow finds money, you know, it's going to, a lot of teachers are going to be laid off. You know, a lot of more programs are going to be cut. I don't think a lot of these public schools, they don't have gym. They don't have music. They don't have after school programs. After school matters has become a joke because they don't have the funding. And Rahm Emanuel is throwing his hands up in the air, said, I did the best I could, the hell with it. You know, so. More administrators are going to be laid off. And even if they do lay a lot of teachers off and a lot of school personnel lose their jobs, they still will not get the money the amount of money that they need to save the schools, period. The schools are bankrupt or on the verge of bankrupt or nearly bankrupt. And it's the fault of Governor Rauner. And this man is running for re-election, and we're not going to have a budget for a long time. The reason why we don't have a budget, because Rauner wants some things that the legislature feel that he shouldn't have, or that should not be a part of the financial package, or should not be a part of the budget. They should be separate. But Rauner said, hey, you give me what I want, or I'm going to destroy these schools, because Bruce Rauner doesn't like public schools. He thinks they're awful. He thinks they're filled with nothing but poor people, and he doesn't care. He really doesn't care. And he wants to take control of the schools, but the legislature said, no way. He feels he can control all the legislature, but they still say, no, he may be a Republican governor, but he can't get much through because we have a Democratic legislature in both houses in Illinois. So he can just make proposals, and he's got ads all over television, political ads running for governor for his reelection. And his reelection is 15 months away. He's getting an early start on it. That's crazy. You know, I mean, these politicians, these Republican politicians, these rich guys, they love having influence over you. They want that. But just like he can only do two terms in office. Just like the president of the United States, he can only do two terms. He can't be governor for a third or fourth time. He won't even be governor for a second time, because without a budget in the state of Illinois, and you're hurting so many people, these people are going to remember that. They're going to say, hell no, we don't want you. And he's got about six or seven Democratic opponents running against him. The only reason why he has so many opponents running against him is because they know he's vulnerable. I mean, anytime you don't have a budget in your state, and it's because of the governor, you think they're going to vote this guy back in? No way. I think people have an election of Bruce Rauner in Illinois and other Republicans around the country. I think people have woke up. I believe they have woke up, and they're going to vote their asses off come November 2018. They know that the Republicans are not for them. They know that the Republicans are for themselves. I think people have woke up. I mean, people voted like hell in 2016. Lines were around the corners in some of these polling places. They voted like hell, but they voted for Hillary Clinton. Okay? She got 3 million more votes than Donald Trump. She won the popular vote. Somehow, Trump and his minions got received more in the electoral votes than she did, and it's the electoral votes that count. You know, so that's crazy, but that's how it goes. That's what the Constitution. But anyway, we have to get out here and vote. We have to fight the good fight. You know, you have to get out here and vote, because I think that's what people are going to do. I don't think we're going to have Rauner. Rauner has done nothing successfully for the state of Illinois. He's like Trump. He signed a lot of executive orders. Executive orders can be undone just like they've been signed. He has done nothing legislatively. He has done nothing concrete. He's had no wins in the state of Illinois. Just like Trump has had no wins. So he's done exactly nothing. He's all over the television with these ads as if he's the greatest thing that ever happened to Illinois, and everybody else is dumb and stupid. You know, so I don't think he's going to get in office. I didn't vote for him in the first place, because the minute he got into office, he started doing things and unraveling social programs and upending daycare centers. A lot of these places have closed down because there's no funding. When you have no budget, you can't spend money. And a lot of these vendors and all of these people expecting money, even Medicaid is running out of money. I mean, you have a lot of doctors around Illinois saying that they will not be able to see more patients until they get paid. Until they get paid. So that means a lot of people are going to die because they won't be able to see the doctor to get treated. This is crazy. And probably will not be able to get their medication. This guy doesn't give a damn. He doesn't care. He wants what he wants. And what he wants is to bust unions. He wants to circumvent workman's comp. He wants things that's gonna hurt Illinois. And the Democrats in the legislature saying no. So we're at a dead heat here. And they've been saying no for 3 years. And he's been saying, well, you won't have a budget for 3 years. Bruce Rauner's has been and is holding the state hostage for the things that he wants that he can't get because we have a Democratic legislature and we have no budget. So that means we can't spend money. So we are in billions and billions and billions of dollars in debt. Once there is a new governor, he's going to have to figure out how he's going to pay all this big backlog of billion-dollar bills that Governor Bruce Rauner refused to pay. And then he get his ass on television and act as if it's someone else's fault, wearing those plaid shirts like he's a country singer or something. You know, so, yeah, it's bad in the city of Chicago. It's really bad, and I think Rahm Emanuel is just showboating. You know, I really do. But the schools in the city of Chicago are terrible. I would say to parents who are sending their kids to school, take your kids out and teach them yourself. But there are so many parents with a lot of children, a lot of kids, they don't have the skills or the education or the know-how to homeschool their children. And that's sad. So you have to send them to an institution that really is not educating them. Really is not educating. I think some of these schools, our public schools, are just making these kids a little bit more dumber than what they are. So I would say for those parents who do have the resources and the know-how and the education to educate your kids, take them out of public schools and do them yourself, because as long as these schools stay political, it will always hurt these children. The kids will be hurt. It's the adults that are fucking up. It's not the children. It's the adults that are making things awful. The children are just in the middle of all this crap. And that's a damn shame. I mean, you've got the budget is cutting. The budget is cut. They don't have any money. And they're throwing disabled kids off the school buses. That's a damn shame because they don't have any money. How are kids going to get to school? If some kids depend on a school bus, if the school bus stopped coming, how are some of these children going to get to school? Their parents don't have any money. They're too young to catch the subway train or the buses. How are they going to get to school? They can't. So their education is thrown up in the damn air just like that. Throwing these kids off the school bus, eliminating school bus, eliminating routes, not picking up kids because they don't have the money to pay for the school buses. So they're going to eliminate the school and the kids won't be able to get to school. The parents, they don't have a car. No car. And the kids are too young to take the subway line or whatever, or the bus. And the child is disabled. So, you know, it's just awful. It's totally awful. And I don't know how they're going to fix this, folks. I don't even think they can fix it. unless Rahm Emanuel somehow pull $1 million out of his ass. He has been known to do that. He has been known to say they don't have any money for this, they don't have money for that. Next thing you know, they done pull money from somewhere. They got it. And for what I understand, there is money, but it's for another project or something. And they're saying for Rahm Emanuel to use that TIF money to cover some of the to cover the schools, you know, and a lot of aldermen are saying that, some politicians are saying that, but Rahm Emanuel hasn't budged on that. So that's why I know he doesn't give a damn about these schools. He's just showboating. He's just, you know, he's showboating. He doesn't give a damn. And he knows that this is his last go around as mayor of the city of Chicago. He knows it. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, it's been fun. I just love to go off on the radio sometimes. And it's fun. It's great. And I hope I'm interesting. And I always try to be interesting. Okay. My guest for tomorrow. Do we have a guest? Okay. Let's just say this. I'm reaching down to try to get my schedule. All right, tomorrow there, John Vespasian. He was on the show once before. He's a great guy. Great guy. I believe he's from Australia. If I may have that wrong, but I do know he calls from somewhere out of the country, which is great because this show reaches all over the world. The George Wilder Jr. Show is all over the world. I mean, I get people from a lot of countries, and that's great. That's fun. That's interesting. I have friends, you know, all around the place. And that's great. That's beautiful. Okay, we will be right back. We're going to do this, if I can find it. All right, we're going to All right, we'll do this. We'll be right back. Keith Olbermann, folks. Keith Olbermann.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. The White House continues to deny that the Attorney General's demand for the resignations of all 46 incumbent U.S. attorneys around the country and the subsequent optical disaster of the firing of New York's U.S. Attorney, Preet Bharara, was instigated by a paranoid Sean Hannity TV segment demanding the immediate purge of everybody in the government who had worked for President Obama. The circumstantial evidence, however, supports the theory that it was Hannity's puppeteer hand up Trump's back. And that circumstantial evidence consists of the grim reality that we have elected President Emily Letella. If you're too young, she was the Saturday Night Live little old lady character portrayed by the late, great Gilda Radner, who came on to give ludicrous editorial replies during weekend updates such as, I'm here tonight to speak out against busting school children. What's all this fuss I keep hearing about saving Soviet jewelry? What's all this fuss I keep hearing about endangered feces? Then they would correct her, and she'd say, that's very different, and then pause and say, never mind. 122 vicious prisoners released by the Obama administration from Gitmo have returned to the battlefield. Just another terrible decision. Even the Fox News segment that President Emily Letella got that from did not mess that up. 113 of the prisoners were actually released by the Bush administration. Never mind. But Trump was watching. Not listening. As in February, seemingly talking about terrorism in Europe. You look at what's happening last night in Sweden. Sweden! Who would believe this? Sweden! They took in large numbers. That was so off that it prompted the closest thing Trump has yet made to an admission that he's ever screwed anything up. My statement as to what's happening in Sweden was in reference to a story that was broadcast on Fox News concerning immigrants in Sweden.
Does it be there?
Others have suggested that Trump is a real-life equivalent of the Peter Sellers character, Chauncey Gardner, in the extraordinary movie Being
There. Was it there today?
Sellers portrayed a gardener who lived his entire life on the grounds of a rich man's mansion and understood only two things, gardening.
When you saw it when you were going to the library?
Discovered he is mistaken for a political savant and is soon consulting the president, who misunderstands the platitudes of TV that Sellers repeats as deep, subtle insight. But Chauncey Gardner knew his television. He could recite all the commercials. He was listening. Trump is just as much of a television addict with just as little connection to non-television reality. But while he is ruling this country based largely on what he sees on TV, it reinforces what he already saw on TV or reinforces what he thinks he already saw on TV. He's not even paying attention to the TV. Since the inauguration, he has tweeted about a minimum of 11 news stories it seems fair to believe he saw on television and gotten them wrong in some way. Besides the Swedish and Gitmo stories, the Women's March protesters. Why didn't these people vote? The so-called carnage in Chicago, the so-called expert who could prove there were 3 million illegal votes, only the guy has never produced the evidence that he's promised. His conclusion that all the protesters in Berkeley were paid thugs, exaggerating the target of a terrorist attack in Paris from the Louvre Mall to the Louvre Museum. His announcement, although protests at the Republican town halls had been planned by liberals, that the first time Jeff Sessions ever met the Russian ambassador, it was arranged by Obama. About Arnold Schwarzenegger's departure from The Apprentice, and add to those the crazy Obama tapped my phone story. He's President Emily Letella. Trump's first 279 non-deleted tweets as president are amazingly television-centric. There were two in which he congratulated himself on the TV ratings of his inauguration, 10 promoting the broadcasts of TV interviews he has given, including the exact time the show would air. There are 6 that specifically criticize CNN, 1 that criticizes MSNBC, and 24 that refer imprecisely to media, fake news, fake media, or fake news media, including one about how, after he called them all that and called them the enemy of the American people, quote, "It is amazing how rude they are." And the number of Trump tweets that include Fox graphics or images or congratulations to Fox News on its ratings or simple statements tagged at Fox and Friends as if he's grandpa yelling at the television, that's 12 tweets. This is a total of 54 tweets about TV or stuff he kind of saw on TV. I have invoked Saturday Night Live and the film being there, so why not one more? In the other great speech in the fantastic Patty Chayefsky movie Network, Peter Finch as Howard Beale reminds us what television really is. When the 12th largest company in the world controls the most awesome goddamn propaganda force in the whole godless world, who knows what shit will be peddled for truth on this network? So listen to me. Television is not the truth. We're in the boredom-killing business. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there, day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds, we're all you know. You're beginning to believe the illusions we're spinning here. You're beginning to think the tube is reality and that your own lives are unreal. You do whatever the tube tells you. You dress like the tube. You eat like the tube. You raise your children like the tube. You even think like the tube. This is mass madness, you maniacs. In God's name, you people are the real thing. We are the illusions. Sound like anybody we know? So is there a solution to President Emily Letella? I mean, before he is impeached, or imprisoned, or institutionalized. Well, years ago, an unhappy CEO whose fourth largest company
more like institutionalized
sat me down and threatened to take the network off the air. I don't mean figuratively. I mean fire everybody at it, pay us our full contracts, and shut the channel off. Because a rival cable network was making up stories about how this CEO personally was selling materiel used to make weapons with which American servicemen were being killed. The man said his 80-something mother back in Cincinnati watched the rival network and kept calling him up to yell at him about his disloyalty, and he had had enough. So I said politely that I thought he was overreacting. And maybe there was a middle ground short of shuttering the network that was finally making him a reported $100 million a year in profit. And he said, like what? And I offered him a few ideas, and then I decided to point out to him how crazy his idea was, and I said it was exactly this crazy. How old did you say your mother was again? I asked. 80-whatever, he answered. Well, if she's that old, she certainly wouldn't be able to put up much of a fight if you sent one of your guys to her house and pulled her cable connection out of the wall. The CEO got furious, then he laughed, and then we compromised. But now I'm thinking, maybe this is the solution with Trump. Bannon and maybe a couple of Trump's rent-a-cops go in and pull all the goddamn cable out of the White House before this bastard kills us all. Because unlike Emily LaTella, when Trump is told he has misunderstood something he heard on TV, he does not say, never mind. Resist. Peace.
All right. Thanks, Keith. That's Keith Olbermann of the Resistance. And I don't know. Did you see Hillary Clinton? She says one of the things she said in a current interview, and she said a lot of stuff. Basically, she said she won the popular vote, and she did, and all that kind of thing. At the end of it, she says, I'm still a part of the resistance. And if you don't know what the resistance is, I'm thinking that it's basically means to resist Donald Trump at every turn, especially when he's trying to take away your freedoms and your liberties. The other day, Donald Trump talked about shutting down the government. Yeah, he said it. I don't think it's going to happen. He was saying shut down the government around September because he's not getting what he wants. The Democrats are pissing him off. They're not on board with what he wants to do, and he doesn't like that. He doesn't like all the criticism that he's getting. He's given the finger to all the people who did not vote for him. Yeah, literally, he's given the finger to all of us. I mean, anybody who criticized him, he's coming after you. I mean, that's Trump. And I think Trump has probably learned that he cannot run the United States like a business. It's not going to happen. It's not a business. Yeah, I agree. Things are tough and hard. Yeah. But you wanted the job, so you have to do it or resign. You know, I mean, you got a lot of people around. There's no doubt about it. Trump's learning on the job. People around him are filling him in on how to do things, how to govern, because he knows nothing, and he probably still knows nothing. People are feeding him, spoon feeding him, big words, because most people think that Trump talks at a third grade level. And I have to go maybe a fourth or fifth level. I'm not going to go as low as some other people go. And he's a mess. He's our president. So we got to deal with him. And it's going to be rough. It's going to be hard. And the man is dangerous. There's no doubt about it. 347-857-1762. It is 7-11 straight up Chicago time. I believe it's around 45 degrees near the lake. And it's cold, gray. It's the kind of weather that makes you want to sleep all day, right? And one of the things about it being cold and gray, you start to feel gray inside. If the day is gray, somehow you may start to feel just as gray. On contrast, if it's sun shining and there's a beautiful day, butterflies are everywhere, birds are singing, you feel just like that particular day also. You know, it resonates. You know, it does resonate. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. There's a lot of people who are into the AARP, and we're going to have some people on the show who's going to talk about that and sometime during the near future. AARP, I can talk about it now, but I'd rather some people come on the show and do it, because it's very, very interesting. It's very interesting. All righty. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me right here. Follow me right here on the George Wilder Jr. Show. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the third one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day.
All right, gunshots at North Lake College campus in Irving, Texas. Fatal campus shootings. I mean, there have been so many college campus shootings around the America, and I don't know what's with some of these colleges. They can't seem to protect the students that go to some of these colleges. The bad guys are everywhere. As I've just got through stating, make sure that you're aware of your surroundings. You know, people come out of nowhere and they will hurt you. And be aware of your surroundings. Always, always. Okay, elderly driver loses control and slams into a crowd of people, killing 3. 9 of those folks are injured, you know. You know, so I don't know. Oh, yeah, the Republicans are trying to repeal Obamacare. Yeah, they are saying, I've read on the CNN website that they have the votes to repeal Obamacare. But, you know, we'll see. But if the House votes to repeal Obamacare, then it would have to go to the Senate. It may not get past the Senate. I'm not sure. And then if it does get past the Senate, if it gets past the House and the Senate, then it goes to the president's desk. And you knew Donald Trump is going to sign it. And that will be the end of Obamacare. It will be Trump care. But they say don't call it Trump care, because if people don't like it and it's screwed up and it's effed up, they don't want Trump's name on it, because Trump doesn't want his name on it, because, you know, he don't want to be to blame for it. But he will be, because he signed it into office. So he'll have to take the blame if it screws up. But I don't know if this is going to pass. A lot of people are upset with it, especially some of the constituency of the Republicans. So, you know, I don't know. GOP finds new momentum on the health care bill. So it could pass the House. This guy is saying that, hey, wow, we've got it. Minority Leader McCartney is saying that they have the votes. They have the votes to pass this thing. Too bad it didn't happen within Trump's 100 days, which wasn't didn't amount to anything. But if you ask Trump about his 100 days as president, he'll tell you that it was very, very successful. It was so successful that he can't stand it. It was too successful. But everybody else is saying, no, no way. There was no major legislation passed. Now, everything that he tried to do failed. You know, the wall, money for the wall, that failed. Muslim bans, that failed. That was a catastrophe. Wow. The only thing he's done was sign a lot of executive orders, which can be erased with a stroke of a pen. I'm not belittling his executive orders, but they're not as tight, airtight, as if he had done a lot of things legislatively, using Congress and the senators, you know, so airtight, you know. And he also says he wants to change, he's considered on changing the First Amendment to the Constitution. That was something that was considered, according to his minion, Reese Priebus, or something. Anyway, seniors, be aware of your surroundings. I mean, not just seniors, but everybody, be aware of your surroundings, because the bad guys are out there and they are not playing. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're just about off the air, folks. It's let's see, what time is it? 7:24, 7:25. And it's been fun. And I hope you guys join me tomorrow. It's going to be, I'm going to have another great guest on the show. And he or she should probably tell us why. Most of the time, they will say why they're here and let you know about whatever thing they're talking about, or a book or something, a product or something. And that should be interesting. Like I said, I'm always ready to learn something, because we learn something every day, all the time, and it's always interesting. It's always interesting. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio, yeah, right here. I've been with Blog Talk Radio for almost 4 years, four years. Can't even remember. Can't remember, because I'm having so much fun. It is fun. And as for getting paid, I don't think I should be getting paid. It's so much fun to do it. And it is fun. It is fun. If I would to say to anybody, if you want to get into radio, do something like this, you just make sure that you're having a good time. Whatever you do, have a good time. That's all it's about. And that's it. Just have a good time. All right, folks, we're going to be checking out, and I hope you guys had a good time listening to the show today. And we will be back tomorrow, and we're going to have great guests. I may even have a co-host. Who knows? There's going to be great things to talk about, and I hope you join me. Bye-bye, everybody. Take care.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man as a crawl. Heaven help us all.
Again, goodbye, everybody, and I hope you join me tomorrow. It was fun, as always. Goodbye, everybody. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.